Welcome to Historical Jesus. I'm Mark Vinette. King Herod the Great of Judea died in 4 BC in Jericho, succumbing to a gruesome, mysterious illness. An enormous funeral procession carried his body on a golden bier to the edge of the Judean desert, where an elaborate resting place in his beloved Herodium awaited him. Let's investigate this story with the help of the Pologia Podcast.
Why Christianity Framed Herod, featuring Dr. Jody Magnus.
Where a former Christian takes a look at the claims of Christians.
King Herod the Great. He's a very well-known figure. I don't think hardly anyone is going to dispute his historical existence. He's presented as a king with a title of king. Now, we can look in Josephus and see that too, but on his coins, Herod had some very, very interesting things. He calls himself King Herod on those coins. So he has the title of king, just like in the Gospels. It's not a governor. It's not some other title that he had. It was elevated to the position of king. And Herod also has some other interesting aspects on his coins. One of them shows this helmet with the star on it. And it seems to be a Roman symbol for the Dioscuri, but it also has some messianic interpretations too.
Beyond just this coin, what can you tell us about Herod and what he thought about himself?
I've written about that particular coin. I connect it with a mint in Samaria. At the time I wrote that paper, I didn't connect it with messianic expectations. I actually connected it with a cult of quarry at Samaria because it's the Cappadocia quarry and there are stone blocks from a temple or shrine to quarry at Samaria that have that same design on them. So there I would actually be a little hesitant to make that leap. But the recent paper that I wrote, which was published in 2019, is about Herod's tomb at Herodion. Herod the Great ruled from 40 BC until his death in 4 BC. And Josephus tells us that when Herod died, and he died in his winter palace at Jericho, his body was brought to Herodium for burial. So we know that Herod was buried at Herodium. It happens to be the only site that we know of that Herod built and named after himself. He built a lot of things, and he always named everything that he built after somebody, in honor of somebody, like Caesarea, which he named in honor of Augustus. But Herodium is the only place that he put his own name on. And it's a fortified desert palace, very close to Bethlehem. Literally, it towers over Bethlehem. It's interesting because Herod named Herodium after himself because he intended it to serve as his everlasting memorial. It's his monument to himself. Now, Josephus tells us that Herod was buried at Herodium when he died, but he doesn't say where the tomb was located. That's a big site. It's a mountain, actually. Herod literally created an artificial mountain there. And finally, in 2007, the late Israeli archaeologist Ehud Netzer and his team found the tomb, which is a mausoleum, halfway up the side of the mountain, more or less on the side facing towards Jerusalem. In my opinion, the discovery of Herod's tomb at Herodium is the most important discovery in this region since the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, the Dead Sea Scrolls have been described as the most important archaeological discovery of the 20th century. I think that Herodium is the next one after that for this century. And the reason I think that is because we have no direct sources of information on Herod in the sense that we have no writings that he wrote. All of our information about Herod is filtered through other sources. So our main source is Josephus, who drew his information, who was born 4 decades after Herod died. So he wasn't alive during the time of Herod. He is drawing on his information from various sources, primarily the lost biography of Herod written by Herod's court biographer Nicolaus of Damascus. So we know that Josephus was taking a lot of information from there, but we don't know what he did with that information because we don't have the original. So we have Josephus, we have scattered references to Herod in other sources, we have the New Testament, the Massacre of the Innocents in Matthew, and then some scattered references also in ancient Jewish sources. Pretty much all of our information about Herod from these written sources is negative, presents Herod in a very negative light. And what's important about the discovery of Herod's tomb, in my opinion, is that now we get to see Herod in his own eyes and to see him in the way that he wanted to be remembered and memorialized. The message that he is giving us unfiltered directly after 2,000 years. The mausoleum is the structure in which Herod's remains were placed. It's basically the structure that marks the spot where Herod was buried, and it's located partway up the mountain, just to be clear about the terminology of mausoleum. So it turns out this mausoleum is a freestanding monument with a tall elevated square podium. It's all made out of stone. And on top of that tall raised podium was a circular structure, which is called a tholos. Tholos is just Greek for circular structure. Surrounded by 18 Ionic columns. Ionic columns are the kinds that have the little curly Q capitals. And then on top of that, a conical roof that goes up from there. And so the team that worked with Ehud Metzer and published a really extensive study of the tomb and the mausoleum, and other scholars have also talked about Herodium in this light. How do we situate this kind of structure within the larger Greek and Roman context? It turns out that all of Herod's other buildings and monuments, it's a hybrid. Herod drew on different kinds of traditions, and he makes a unique combination of things. So he draws on native traditions like Judean traditions or Nabatean, because he was half Nabatean. His mother was Nabatean. And on Greek traditions or Hellenistic traditions and on Roman. And it all merges together without going into all of the different parallels. When you look at what we have at Herodium, the things that are closest are the mausoleum of Augustus at Rome. It's an enormous structure that's a circular cylinder that originally had a massive pile of dirt around it. So it looked like a cylinder coming out of a mound of earth. And the mound of earth is what's called a tumulus. And then the burials were inside that cylindrical structure. So Herodium is somewhat similar to that in that you have a tumulus, this mountain. Coming out of the mountain, originally there was a circular fortress, so it would have looked actually quite close to what you have at Rome in the mausoleum of Augustus. But then you also have this separate mausoleum structure on the side of the mountain, the side of the tumulus at Herodium. And where is that coming from? That's coming from the Hellenistic world. And actually, the inspiration is indirectly the most famous tomb of antiquity, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, which was the mausoleum at Halicarnassus. That's where we get our word mausoleum from, because somewhere in the middle of the 4th century BC, a king who ruled in what is today the southwest coast of Turkey, ancient Halicarnassus, modern Bodrum, died. His name was Mausolus, and he was buried in an enormous monument that consisted of a huge square elevated podium that had a temple-like structure on top, surrounded with columns. And that tomb monument became so famous that ever since then, monumental tombs have been called mausolea for the mausoleum in Halicarnassus. So what happens when the mausoleum in Halicarnassus is built and it becomes famous is that rich and famous people all around the Mediterranean world start to build their own versions. And we also see this even in Judea before the time of Herod. When you talk about this mausoleum on the side of Herodium, that's the ultimate source of inspiration. But there's something a little weird about it. And what's weird about Herod's mausoleum is that the other mausolea, generally, when they had a building on top of the raised podium, it was a rectilinear or square building surrounded with columns, something like a little temple with a pitched roof. In Herod's mausoleum, it's circular. It's a tholos. And that's unusual. And again, it's surrounded by 18 Ionic columns. And this is where I came in, because I noticed there is a very famous ancient tholos that had 18 Ionic columns around it. And 18 Ionic columns is significant because if your viewers are familiar with Ionic capitals, Ionic columns are basically columns that at the top have the capital is the thing at the top of the column. And they have these little curly Q things that look like rolled up scroll on either side top. That kind of a column, that kind of a capital is not well suited to a circular structure because Ionic capitals have two sides. So if you use them, you want to use them in a rectilinear structure, not a circular structure. Circular structures would be much better off with a Doric column, which is just like a simple cushion, or with a Corinthian capital, which is the one with the leaves carved all the way going around. But Ionic doesn't fit circular structures. So you rarely find tholoi, circular structures that are surrounded with Ionic columns. But there's a very famous one, and it's surrounded not just with Ionic columns, but with 18 Ionic columns, which is exactly what we have at Herodium. And that is a structure called the Philippian at Olympia. So Olympia in Greece, the site of the sanctuary of Zeus. And there, the father of Alexander the Great, whose name was Philip, built a structure inside the grounds of the sanctuary, this is unusual, to honor himself and his family after he defeated the other Greek city-states in this big famous battle. So he establishes his victory monument inside the grounds of the sanctuary, inside the sort of perimeter, but also with statues of himself and his family, his wife, and Alexander was there, his son Alexander. On the grounds of the sanctuary, it's something that is not usual in ancient Greece in this period, this sort of merging a mortal Greek ruler with the idea of divinity. Because again, it's inside the sanctuary. And this is something that becomes much more pronounced with Alexander the Great, this kind of a mortal Greek ruler becoming worshipped as divine. So then you might say, well, how would Herod have actually even known of the Philippians? What's the connection? Well, it turns out that Herod, when he visited Rome in 12 BC, returns to Judea by way of Olympia. And at Olympia, he bestowed on Olympia, which was in decline at that point. The Olympic Games are called the Olympic Games because the very first games were held at Olympia in the year 776 BC. So by this point, though, Olympia is in decline. The games are in decline. And Herod bestows a huge amount of money on Olympia and to keep the games going and all sorts of other stuff. And they actually made him an honorary president for life. And then he goes back to Herodium. And guess what? That's when that little mausoleum is built with the 18 Ionic columns. So if we look at the mausoleum in the form of Herodium in its larger context, it's making connections both with Augustus, but also with Alexander the Great. What's interesting is that Alexander was the prototype of these sort of rulers in the Hellenistic and Roman worlds. Everybody emulated Alexander. So Alexander and then these later rulers like Augustus or whatever, they're all emulating him. And that means that they're not just rulers, they're ruling with sort of this idea that they're either divine or they become divine. They become deified after their deaths, one or the other. And by emulating these other monuments, Herod is making a statement. He's placing himself directly in that tradition. The message that he is sending is he is comparing himself and his dynasty, which he hopes to establish, to Alexander the Great, to Augustus. Now, any non-Jew in the Greek and Roman world would have looked at this and said, makes perfect sense. But for the Jews, that would have been a big problem. You have a mortal ruler, first of all, claiming to be divine. Jews didn't accept that. But even the idea of Herod as a legitimate king would have been a problem in the eyes of many of the Jews that he ruled over, because he was not descended from the native Jewish dynasty, the Hasmoneans. He wasn't even fully Jewish, right? His mother wasn't Jewish. So he was Jewish on his father's side of the family through forced conversion. How Jewish he was considered depends on who you ask. So to try and claim that he's a legitimate king when he's not even fully Jewish, when he's appointed by the Romans, an outside power, to be king of Judea, is to establish himself in the eyes of his Jewish population, to establish his legitimacy. Well, what's the best way to do that? You want to connect yourself to David. Because if you connect yourself to David, who is, of course, the royal Messiah. What does it mean, royal Messiah? Not a god. It means the royal anointed one, the legitimate king in the line of David. If you can connect yourself to David, then you can legitimize yourself as the king. And that is apparently what Herod tried to do.
I'm Mark Vinette. Thank you for sharing your time with me. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.